Questioning now, Mike Ruppert. Thank you.
Okay, this is difficult for many of us and somewhat cathartic even all this time after the attacks. And I think I speak for many people in this room to express my gratitude to you, because it's apparent that you have not stopped digging even after the release of the Cain Commission report, and your position seemed to have changed a great deal since then. One of my biggest questions would be, you mentioned them in passing, the war game exercises, which we now know were taking place. There were five simultaneous exercises, and I think we'll hear from another presenter today, six, which in effect paralyzed NORAD response on the day of September the 11th. And you'd also gone to read the footnotes, and I want to comment that I saw Congressman Hamilton, who was the vice chair of the commission on C-SPAN, recently denigrating people who bothered to read the footnotes and point out the inconsistencies, but I thank you for doing that. There is one particular footnote that I will refer to very quickly in the Cain Commission report, which referred to the war game exercise Vigilant Guardian, and I think it's footnote 161, it's in my book, as an over-the-pole Russian exercise to practice for Russian bombers, when in fact the NORAD website indicates that the Russian over-the-pole exercise in progress that day was Northern Vigilance, not Vigilant Guardian, which we now know, thanks to USA Today and many other sources and on the record sources submitted to the commission, was a hijack drill. And we also have statements from Richard Clark in his book that there was another exercise in progress that day called Vigilant Warrior. And I have obtained an on-the-record statement from a NORAD officer indicating that that was a live fly exercise. Have you looked into the issue of the war game exercises, and how important a question do you feel that is to answer? Because I also, and I'll shut up with this, you have gone past the point of you had deliberately stopped using the word mistakes, that there were a bunch of mistakes that occurred on 9/11, that it was all somehow a bunch of sequential accidents, and you made a deliberate statement about the FBI. Are you beginning to feel that there was some deliberate action that might have affected NORAD's response that day?
We waited a long time before we came out with, you know, criticism of the report, because it took a long time to read the report and the footnotes and wait for the monographs to come out. We didn't want to jump to any conclusions, so we gave everybody the benefit of the doubt for a very, very long time, which is why our language has shifted now that we see, you know, more of what was and wasn't in there. As far as the war games go, you know, we read Richard Clark's book also, and I think it's page 4 that talks about a different exercise that's not in the commission report, and it's something that has disturbed us also, because if you're talking about the definitive report of 9/11, everything that happened on the morning of 9/11 should be included, and it isn't. So it's upsetting.
That was Lori Van Auken, widow of the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center, speaking at the July 22nd hearing about the 9/11 Commission report. You also heard Mike Ruppert, author of Crossing the Rubicon. Paul Thompson has compiled an exhaustive 9/11 timeline called Terror Timeline, which is available on the web. Thompson began his remarks with a look at the NORAD response on September 11th.
I want to start off on my discussion about the FAA and NORAD response on the day of 9/11 with a quote from Senator Mark Dayton. Last year, he read the 9/11 Commission report, and he was quite outraged. And let me tell you what he has to say. He said that NORAD and the FAA have covered up, quote, catastrophic failures, unquote, that left the nation vulnerable during the 9/11 hijackings. Quote, for almost 3 years now, NORAD officials and FAA officials have been able to hide their critical failures that left this country defenseless during two of our worst hours in history. NORAD officials lied to the American people, they lied to Congress, and they lied to your 9/11 Commission to create a false impression of competence, communication, and protection of the American people. He calls NORAD and FAA failures, quote, the most gross incompetence and dereliction of responsibility and negligence that I've ever, under those extreme circumstances, witnessed in the public sector. Now, what exactly is he talking about? What are these failures that were so grave? Let me just start real briefly in mentioning what was happening before 9/11, what standard procedure was. NORAD, if you don't know, that's the military organization that defends the skies over the U.S. And the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, they had established standard procedures for air traffic controllers to contact NORAD whenever civilian planes strayed from their pre-arranged flight course or when they lost contact with air traffic control. When NORAD was contacted, they would typically send a fighter up to intercept whatever the problem was with the plane and figure out what was wrong. And then there would be a graduated response. First, they might tip their wings. They might look into the cockpit and try to figure out what the problem was. Now, NORAD claims that at the time of 9/11, the fighters on alert had up to 15 minutes to get airborne. And in fact, it just so happened that there were military exercises that were taking place that day, and they say that because of that exercise, the response time was more like 5 minutes. So within 5 minutes, they could have gotten the planes up into the air. Now, this was contrary to what some people say. This was actually an extremely common and standard procedure before 9/11, and it did not require White House approval. People would just make the decision on the spot in NORAD. For instance, in the year 2000, there were 425 unknowns, pilots who didn't file flight plans, or they diverted from the flight plans, or they were using the wrong radio frequency or something of that matter. In many cases, the issues would get quickly resolved, but in that year, fighters had to take off and investigate these unknowns 129 times in the course of the year. So we see that this what was supposed to happen on 9/11, which was that the fighters would get up very quickly, actually happened on a very regular basis, a couple times a week before 9/11. Well, what's strange, and what Mark Dayton is making reference to, is that there are all these conflicting accounts about what happened and how quickly the fighters responded. And I actually count five major accounts of what happened that day that are in serious conflict with each other. Originally, in the days after 9/11, right after 9/11, Richard Myers, the acting Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, a NORAD spokesman, New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, they all said that there were no fighters launched on the morning of 9/11 until after the Pentagon was hit at 9:37. But then just days later, on September 18th, 2001, NORAD put forth a timeline. They released a timeline that was significantly different. They said that fighters had been ordered to launch 45 minutes earlier than their first account. And then in May 2003, NORAD officials, prominent officials, testified under oath before the 9/11 Commission, and they put forth yet a different timeline that had many different numbers about what happened and when it happened. And then in January 2004, there was a book put out by the military called Air War Over America that had yet again very different account of what happened and when it happened. And finally, the fifth timeline that we come to, the fifth account, is put forth by the 9/11 Commission in June and July of 2004, and this one is probably the most conflicted of all. It's almost a complete rewrite of what happens with the hijacked planes and the response from the fighters.
That was Paul Thompson, author of Terror Timeline, speaking at the July 22nd hearing on the 9/11 Commission report. Finally, Professor Peter Dale Scott of UC Berkeley, author of Drugs, Oil, and War, brought out one of the many curious omissions from the 9/11 Commission report.
Now I'd like to talk a bit about Sergeant Ali Mohammed, and I'm only sorry I don't have enough time to do justice to this subject. The 9/11 report describes Ali Mohammed as, quote, a former Egyptian Army officer who had moved to the United States in the mid-1980s, enlisted in the U.S. Army, and become an instructor at Fort Bragg, as well as helping to plan the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya. In fact, Ali Mohammed was a very important al-Qaeda agent who, as the 9/11 Commission was told, quote, trained most of the al-Qaeda's top leadership, including persons who would later carry out the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, close quote. But the person telling the 9/11 Commission this, U.S. Attorney Patrick J. Fitzgerald, very much in the papers these days, misrepresented Ali Mohammed's FBI relationship. He told the commission that, quote, from 1994 until his arrest in 1998, Mohammed lived as an American citizen in California, applying for jobs as an FBI translator and working as a security guard for a defense contractor. Now, Ali Mohammed was not just an FBI job applicant. Unquestionably, he was an FBI informant, and almost certainly he was something more than this. A veteran of the CIA-trained bodyguards of Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, he was able, despite being on a State Department watch list, to come to America around 1984 on what an FBI consultant has called, quote, a visa program controlled by the CIA, close quote, and to obtain a job, first as a security officer, then with U.S. Special Forces. In 1998, he took a lengthy leave of absence from the U.S. Army and went to fight in Afghanistan, totally against U.S. Army regulations. And there, he met with Ayman al-Zawahiri, who was later bin Laden's chief deputy in al-Qaeda, and the rest of the Arab-Afghan leadership. Despite this breach of regulations, he was able to receive an honorable discharge 1 year later, at which point he established close contact with bin Laden in Afghanistan. Now, Ali Mohammed clearly enjoyed U.S. protection. In 1993, he was detained by the RCMP in Canada, and a single phone call to the United States secured his release. This enabled him to play a role in the same year in planning the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya in 1998. Now, eventually, he was allowed to plea bargain and receive a secret sentence. We don't know what the sentence is, still not known as late as 1991, where he's continuing to talk to the press. The amazing thing, although that he was named as a conspirator in that bombing, he was not an indicted conspirator, which itself is evidence of something going on behind the scene. Congress should determine the true relationship of the U.S. government to Ali Mohammed, who was close to bin Laden and above all Zawahiri, who has been called the main player in 9/11. This is very important, I think, that whereas the report focuses almost uniquely on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Shib, many other sources independently say the main figure and the top brains in al-Qaeda was al-Zawahiri, who Ali Mohammed was clearly close to. I didn't put it in my remarks, but he brought Zawahiri twice to this country to raise funds, ostensibly for charities, but were funds that were used, in fact, for covert operations. So this was our U.S. insight into the top level of the Arab Afghans and of al-Qaeda. In particular, Congress should determine why Patrick Fitzgerald chose to mislead the American people about Mohammed's FBI status. In short, the al-Qaeda terror network accused of the 9/11 attacks was supported and expanded by U.S. programs and covert operations, both during and most importantly after the Soviet-Afghan War. So Congress should rethink their decision to grant still greater powers and budget to the agencies responsible for fostering this enemy in the first place. Sane voices clamor from the Muslim world that the best answer to terrorism is not war, but justice. We should listen to them. By using its energies to reduce the injustices tormenting Islam, the United States will do more to diminish terrorism than by creating any number of new directorates in Washington. Thank you.
That was Professor Peter Dale Scott, author of Drugs, Oil, and War, speaking at the July 22nd hearing, the 9/11 Commission Report 1 year later, a citizen's response. Did they get it right? For more audio from the hearing, go to radio.indymedia.org. From the Trenches is produced by Chicago's Independent Media Center. You can post your own stories, listen to this program again, or find links to news and upcoming events in Chicago and around the world through our internet address. The address is www.chicago.indymedia.org. Many thanks to WLUW for their continued support. Listen again on the fourth Monday in October for another report from the Trenches.